Lord, bless the words of my mouth and the meditation of our hearts, for you are our rock and our redeemer. Amen.
Amen.
Our Christmas tree is still up, but it's starting to lean a little bit. The parched branches are stiffening and flattening out. We put it up a few days before Christmas, and I'm not quite ready to take it down just yet. The white lights and the ornaments are still beautiful, even in the embrace of the imperfect tree. And the tree is also still beautiful, even with needles falling and branches getting a little pinched, a little gnarled. But the real reason I keep the tree up is because it doesn't belong in the house. It's a little wildness creeping into my everyday. I love walking past evergreen needles on my way to the kitchen. And I love the sharp smell of pine in the living room. I love a rock-solid example of the unexpected. An evergreen tree taking up residence in my home for almost a month every year, like a mute houseguest for whom I'm willing to rearrange the furniture. It's vivid green in the midst of winter, and it's Christmas lights in the midst of dark nights, a strong emblem of Christian faith smack in the middle of my living room. And I'm not alone in my love of evergreen trees. All over Brookline, all over Wellesley, all over Massachusetts, apartment windows and house windows let us peek through and see their Christmas trees. So at night, those Christmas tree lights act a little bit like beacons, letting us know who celebrates Christmas, who has the faith. And even now, just a few days before all those trees come down, my neighborhood is marked with these little beacons of Christian faith, winking out from windows. I don't know most of the people who live on Aspinwall Hill, but in the nights between Advent and Epiphany, their belief in God shines out through their windows. And even now, when I drive around at night, it feels like I'm passing little religious lighthouses, which are set off against the secular backdrop of condominiums and brownstones. Not a word is spoken, and I wouldn't recognize most of my neighbors if you put them in a lineup. But I know that the fourth floor walk-up on the corner is lit up with a living room tree decked out with multicolored lights. And the basement apartment has flashing lights on a big wreath. And quite a few brownstones have evergreens wrapped in white lights and ornaments in their high-ceilinged living rooms. When I drive from Wellesley to Brookline in the dark days between Advent and Wellesley, I move from tree to tree. And I feel like I'm tracking Christmas, house to house, home to home, until I reach my own. I know the streets well, and I know the destination I'm heading towards, so it's a predictable and busy journey, with detours to the grocery store and the dry cleaners. But in Advent and the 12 days of Christmas, there's a bit of holiness mixed up in that trip. I keep my eyes open for lights in unexpected places. The holiday we celebrate today is about the opposite kind of holy journey. On Epiphany, we remember three wise men who were brave enough to enter the unknown, the foreign, the strange, in pursuit of the divine. 2,000 years ago, they left everything that was familiar to them, their countries, their customs, their language, their local dress, and they took a chance on God. They allowed God to upend their lives that they'd built for themselves. They said yes to an unexpected journey over an unfamiliar landscape, which lasted for months. And they had no idea where the final destination would be. They just knew they had to follow the star. Would we have had the courage to go? I sometimes wonder if there were 4 or 5 wise men at the start of the journey, but only 3 who persevered to the end. The 3 wise men we read about in Matthew's gospel trusted that God would reveal the new king they'd been told to seek. And they understood that their hearts would be restless till they took that leap in faith and went seeking after him. If we really pay attention to the wise men, their courage should take our breath away. They had a burning sense of clarity that God was demanding something from them. And they must have had a searing trust to keep on going when the going was difficult. They remained unyielding until they knelt before the child. I've always wondered what they did afterwards when they went home another way to avoid Herod and returned home. What did they do to live into the fullness of that sighting of Christ on his mother's lap? Were they kinder than they'd been before? Or if they'd always been kind, did they now have motivation that kept them kind and made them grateful in ways that they couldn't have understood before? They said yes to God in a way that is similar to Mary's yes when the angel came down to visit her. And they took on a dangerous journey. Did they witness Christ? Or were they transformed by him? They looked into his radiant face and put their gold and frankincense and myrrh down on the ground. But what did they do when they got home? The Reverend Dr. Howard Thurman, a poet and a minister, says that the real work of Christmas begins when the songs of the angels are stilled, the star in the sky is gone, the kings and the princes are home, and the shepherds are back with their flocks. And then the Reverend Thurman reminds us of what the real work of Christmas is: to find the lost, to help heal the brokenhearted, to feed the hungry, to release the prisoners, to rebuild the nations, to bring peace among people, and to make music in the heart. I hope that those are the things the wise men did in the name of Christ when the star left the sky and they returned home. And I hope that those are the things that you and I will do when we return home without our lit Christmas trees to inspire us. Wise men, wise women, and wise children still seek him, and he is always waiting for us to find him. He is always ready to transform us. When he's a grown man, he will tell us, "Behold, I make all things new."